And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of the evening where we discuss with an author their book. And tonight we are blessed with Dr. Bill Cloke, who has authored the book Lovemaking from the Inside Out. When I read the title, I thought, okay, this is exactly the type of work that I like to talk about. And I think, you know, the journey that we go on with self-love is incredibly important. So welcome, Dr. Bill Cloke.
Thank you.
And why don't we start a little bit with, you know, how did you get involved in this? Obviously, this is your life work. This is what you do. But is there anything that sort of motivated you to get involved in this area?
Well, probably getting married was one of the bigger incentives, I must say. Trying to figure out how to make a marriage work, and like I say to my patients, it's anybody can get married, but not everybody can make a marriage.
Yeah.
And in order to make a marriage, one has to do some very important things, one of which is to be able to understand oneself. And the better we are with ourselves, obviously the better we can be with others, and the more we're self-accepting, self-understanding, and the more able we are to be caring and compassionate with ourselves, the more that extends out to everyone around us. So I started doing work with couples, and as I did work, I started developing ideas, and I would give handouts to couples. And after a period of time, the handouts started getting larger and larger, and eventually I said, you know, I think I have a book here. And that started the journey toward creating this concept of lovemaking from the inside out, meaning that there are two relationships going on. Three actually. Mm-hmm. One with each one of the people that are in the relationship, and one between one another. So it's always the sense of within and between.
Yeah.
As a way of thinking about how we relate.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it got started.
There's a lot of information in your book, and it's very helpful for anybody who, even for those who aren't in relationships, to even understand, you know, maybe some of the stuff that goes on in your past relationships, or even looking at yourself to understand yourself better, to assist you to create that relationship.
Yes. That's very much the theme of the book, is that by looking inward as well as outward, we regain a lot of insight, and that relationships are important because they help us to become a better person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what one of the main things that I think is so good about relationships is that they require us to be better people, that in order to be in them in a good way, we have to be good people. Because we have to treat someone well, we have to treat them with respect, we have to treat them with a sense of concern, we have to be able to listen, we have to be able to understand their point of view from their perspective, not from our own.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a lot of work to be able to do that well. So people think they can just sort of drop into a relationship and everything will just kind of work on its own. It's not really like that. It's much more of a personal and an endeavor towards developing a sense of connection, both internally and externally.
Right. While you were doing your work, and at the very end, I'd love to go through maybe some tips and techniques. I know we're going to go through a lot of stuff right now, but, you know, as to what people can prepare and assist themselves for the holidays. But, you know, while you were writing this, or while you were doing your work, I think you kind of came up with four major themes that sort of emerged with couples.
Uh-huh.
Do I
speak to those themes?
Yeah. So the first one was, no matter how much love and passion you have, for love to last, you have to actively create it. So it's a process. It's not something that you just, you know, love happens, but for you to maintain love, you have to actively participate, and you have to have, you know, I think the commitment and the drive and desire to want to make it work.
That's right. that love is really an activity.
Yeah.
It's a verb. It's not a noun. It's not a state of being. It's really an active process. And people say, well, it takes work. And the work of relationships is the sense of involvement, the sense of paying attention to the relationship and being concerned about how to create what we consider to be an atmosphere of a loving relationship. And, you know, in all forms of spiritual work, the cornerstone and the fundamental belief system is always loving kindness. And if we can create that and develop that within a relationship, which is not so easy living day to day with someone in kind of an atmosphere where there are differences and things that we do that aren't the same. One person wants the air conditioning up and one wants the heat down, and the other one wants the window open. The other one, you know, there are all sorts of things that go on in relationships that are much more complex than that. Even down to simple, very simple things, there are vast differences between one another. And those, to be able to work those out in a compassionate way, in a loving way, with a lot of kindness, is sort of the work that relationships require. So in that sense, it's really an active process of attending to the relationship and attending to the atmosphere that the relationship exists in. And if we can create that kind of loving atmosphere, then it really makes for a very, very caring and loving life. That's what, you know, I think everybody wants. But it usually involves a certain level of natural sort of what I consider to be a kind of a natural antagonism that goes on in relationships that cannot be helped. It's just part and parcel of the way things are. You know, it's the irritants, the differences that go on. But being able to navigate those in a positive way is really the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm. The second one was really about our own self-knowledge and the fact that, you know, we need to know ourselves and the teamwork that is involved to resolve the conflict that you say that can lead to a deeper intimacy.
Yeah. The goal of conflict is to deepen the intimacy. And if people understand that, then they go about conflicts in a completely different way. They look at them in a different way. That each conflict, if it's resolved in a way where we can acknowledge the other person, where we understand where they're coming from and what they need and what they want and what's valuable and what's important to them, and you start working on those things as a couple, then conflicts are really a way of getting much closer and developing a stronger and more deeper intimacy, because we each feel understood and valued in our own position. And if we can do that, then that is really a tremendous support for a caring and loving environment. But in that, what you said a moment ago was that the more we know ourselves, the better we are able to navigate conflicts. Because oftentimes, what I see in conflicts is it's more often a personal issue that's coming up that's creating a conflict than it is really about a conflict. I mean, you have the normal irritations, but when you really have a problem, usually there's something going on with each individual. And if each person is willing to take a look and has an understanding of themselves, then they can say, well, you know, that's mine. That belongs to me. That's part of what I do. And this is why. And it goes along with how I grew up and what happened to me and the things that go on and the things I don't know about or the things I don't understand that I never learned because my family never did it that way. You know, my family never really talked about feelings. My family never really resolved issues. Everything was kind of swept under the table. Everybody used methods of defense and, you know, turning away from each other or shutting down as a method for working out problems. And so therefore, I don't know how to address things. I don't know how to express what I need when I need it. You know, I'm going to go inward instead, and then it's all going to come out in one big, giant, expose of complaints as opposed to really working out those things as we go along.
Right. How do you recommend people, I mean, there are some of us who are very good at active listening, but how do we, you know, because we get so caught up in our story, thinking that you're doing something to me, how mm-hmm. do we then switch that over and say, well, wait a minute, this is something that keeps happening to me, these are my issues. Mm-hmm. But how do I look at it and say, okay, so how do I understand your issues? How do I get to that place where I can go, hey, you know, and I assume it's probably through, you know, very deep communication, but, you know, getting to that place where you can understand the other person and where they're coming from.
Well, first of all, one of the things that I stress a lot with couples is that the most important thing that people need in any kind of discourse is acknowledgement. Is that that's the critical piece. When I found them working with couples, that one of the things that I do when I'm working with them is to make sure that each person understands that I completely understand what they're trying to say. Mm-hmm. And that goes an awful long way with everybody to resolve whatever the problem is. So if I'm with a couple or they're with each other, let's say, in a process, and the the man or the woman is saying, or the woman, mm-hmm. depending on the relationship. But if each one of them is saying, yes, I really understand what you're saying, and I get what you're trying to do, because I've taken the time to try to understand what that is. And that when people realize that the most important thing is that they understand each other, they don't have to agree, but that they do understand, probably 75% of the time at least, that's the end of the conflict. Because people really want to be heard. And if they are heard, then either it will de-escalate the anger or the frustration, or it'll create a whole new dialogue where people can start to talk about, well, you want this, and this is what you're feeling, and this is what I can do to make it better. So there's really kind of a step-by-step process where the first thing is acknowledgement, the second thing is determining what the problem is, and then finding some solutions that both people can feel comfortable with, depending on what the situation is. Right. You know, and you can use a very simple example of two people trying to pick out, carpet for the living room, and you know they can set down all the different types of carpet, but there's going to be one kind of sample that they're both going to agree on, and that can go for almost every possibility in that process. Notwithstanding family issues, which can be a little more complicated, so then the process of defining the problem can take a little while. But if it's housed in the process of understanding and compassion and recognition, then that really takes care of a lot of the painful qualities of the situation, because most of the time those conflicts remain because neither party is listening.
Right.
They're both just defending their position.
Right.
Or trying to correct what the other person, they don't see the other person seeing their position well enough, so they keep saying it over and over again, or they keep ramping it up depending on the situation. So there's a lot of pieces to this. It gets a little complex. I won't go into all of it right now, but mm-hmm. I'll try to touch on the main points.
No, that's brilliant. The third theme was probably, you know, probably one of our biggest challenges, which is, you know, that we're worthy of being loved, that we can develop this connection within and between ourselves in a relationship. But, you know, I think spiritually and socially, emotionally, mentally, mm-hmm. I mean, it probably is one of the biggest areas. I mean, we have learned conditional love. So just that very fact that it has been conditional has, you know, created all of these unworthiness issues within us and, you know, our own questioning of whether we're worthy of being loved.
Well, that's a really, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that is a kind of an essential piece in all this, is that relationships really do bring out the complete depth of the personality and the depth of our own wounds. And what I call emotional wounds are this sense of what I refer to as shame wounds, which involve how we see ourselves and how we define ourselves to ourselves, and our sense of worth, our sense of being able to be loved, our sense of deserving love, is such a profound issue in many relationships where people feel that, you know, they're not worthy of it unless they are perfect or they do everything just right. And trying to do everything perfectly involves two things. One is you're failing, and the next thing is that you're always criticizing yourself. And those also, the same sense of perfection, which is a derivation of not feeling close enough to our own parents, and then trying to be perfect is a way of trying to resolve that distance that children feel, and that we carry that into our relationships in the sense of our worth and our value. And these are more profound issues that are going on all the time deep down in the relationship that people oftentimes have no idea that they're even there.
Mm-hmm.
I just started with a man yesterday or the day before, and he's been having such an enormous amount of conflict and violence with his wife, and he didn't understand that it was really based on his feelings of complete powerlessness and worthlessness. That his sense of worth was just non-existent, and he turned to alcohol, and he grew up in a violent setting, and every time there was a problem, his solution was to become violent. And so it's destroyed his relationship, but he never really understood the depth of what was going on that was causing it. And so to him, it was a great revelation to understand, oh my God, this is what's causing this. That every time he married a woman who's come from a very wealthy family, and so he, you know, really felt always kind of under her wing. And then every time there was a problem, he would exert a lot of emotional power and be threatening and physical and those kinds of things. But he didn't realize this is what he was really trying to work out, his sense of powerlessness and the sense of worthlessness. And these oftentimes are the core issues, and usually everybody's got them. And they come from a family dynamic. And, you know, we live in families that are very, very small, where we're used to, in terms of our own psyche, to be in tribal organization, where there are lots of people around that we can rely on. So the two family homes where both people are working, and it's very stressful, and the parents are tired every night, and the children are just not getting what they need, and that has an effect. And it's not that parents don't love their children, they just can't always pay attention because of the demands of modern life. And so I try to bring this in, that this causes problems, and that these problems are then brought into intimate relationships, and we don't understand what's really going on until we can look deeply.
Yeah.
I hope that kind of covers it.
Oh, definitely.
Kind of thumbnails. These are pretty complex subjects. So,
exactly.
But hopefully people can get an idea of what I'm saying and then can research and look into it for themselves.
Exactly. And your last major theme was, you know, that the goal is to form a loving relationship, and so that we are looking for a safe and secure relationship with comfort and harmony. And I think, you know, that's the goal for everybody. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we want a relationship to be a safe haven and a place where we can come to feel safe and we can be nurtured and supported in the arms of the other. And this is a very critical theme that most people have a hard time doing, both because they become very frightened of intimacy because of the fear of being rejected or hurt, humiliated. Any of those kinds of things make it very difficult, and people build walls. But the point is to develop a strong sense of safety and security within the relationship that people feel that they can express their deeper vulnerability to one another. And this is a very hard thing for a lot of people, especially if they didn't come from that. But it's what we all crave and what we all want and what we need. And this is what I call emotional food, that we need to get fed emotionally or things are going to go wrong. We're going to try to get our emotional food through acceptance or through being another kind of person than we really are, to try to get other people to give us acceptance because we're not giving it to ourselves and we're not able to get it within our intimate relationships. And to be able to have that is the goal of all relationships, that they're nurturing and that they're safe. And to be able to develop that safety does take some work in being able to be loving and kind. So our mate always feels safe and secure to be able to open themselves up emotionally to be loved and to give love.
Right. And I think, you know, talk about what the problem is, solution. But, you know, I think often we've all made these masks, if you want to call them, or, you know, these unauthentic ways of relating to people, because we've already built them long before we ever entered into a relationship. We were already in a relationship with our family and had to create them for them. And then we were in school and had to create them for them. And so we've become very accustomed to creating these personalities that are just not authentic and not really what we're doing. So therefore the biggest problem is that we tend to dump our personal pain onto those we love.
Yes. That's very astute of you. What I try to talk to people about is they get really ashamed of that, and they get very upset that they're doing that. And what I try to reassure them is they're really just trying to get their needs met. And the more critical they are with themselves, the more unaccepting they are with themselves, the more they demand that kind of perfection of themselves, and then and try to put that out in a way with other people where they feel that because they feel so unaccepted in a certain way internally, that they're going to try to get their needs met in some way, and that that's really okay, that they're trying to get their needs met. It just doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because the focus is on the self. If I'm having to focus on myself in order to be a certain way, in order to get the acceptance and the love that I am not giving to myself, then in a way I'm not really connected to the other person. Therefore, I always come away from those kinds of situations in some way continuing to be depleted. And what I call this is self-depletion internally that causes us to want to try to get our needs met from a depleted self. And the depletion is that we are not giving ourselves a sense of acceptance and love that we sorely need from ourselves, and that we're going to try to get it somewhere because we need to have a sense of well-being. That's what our whole system psychologically is built to do.
Right.
I can give you a little brain physiology here, but it's a little too much.
And so then the solution is that we have to learn more about ourselves, and we have to accept and able to express, you know, our own needs and wants. And I think a lot of us have been so disappointed from the past experiences that we're, you know, terrified of being able to express what we need and want. And and even to the point where we've given up even knowing what we need and want.
Yeah. I think we form these relationships, as you said, very early on, and that we just kind of continue them onward and without really realizing how unsatisfying they are. You know, that a lot of people who do this, you know, they seek solitude because it's too much work being with people. They're working so hard to get acceptance that it's exhausting. And so they need to be alone, and they can't carry on relationships because they can't carry on the, you know, the inauthentic process. You know, they can't continue to do that. It's too much work. So they can't remain in relationships, and they sabotage them so that they can be alone.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult for people to maintain that. So understanding that process and being able to relieve ourselves of this pressure to perform for other people, to get our needs met, and the more we're able to be self-gratifying in the sense that we accept ourselves, we feel that we're valuable people, that we feel that we have something to give to relationships, that we're a loving person, and that we don't have to be, you know, perfect in order to get loved, then that's a very profound event in our lives, and it can produce a sense of being able to be relaxed and be ourselves and be able to enjoy the company of other people without feeling that we have to really work so hard.
And it means also being able to express the negative aspects. Like, and being okay with that, like accepting that, you know, this is how we've been, and it just was, you know, an aspect of ourselves from a very young age that needed to be, experience something. I mean, the shame that we go through, and I think probably shame may be one of the largest areas that we don't really understand about ourselves very much. But it's really something that is what blocks us from loving ourselves and being in a healthy relationship.
Yes. You know, you're exactly right in that sense. And I've spent an enormous amount of my career understanding how shame works and how it's the underpinning of most difficult problems, many difficult problems that people have. And so understanding how we got to that place and how it was formed and in what way, and then what we're trying to do, what we try to do then to survive and to get our needs met, may have helped us to get through a difficult period, but it may not be helping us now.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to understand that from a very deep sense of acceptance of all of the people concerned in that is very helpful to develop another way to be able to be more clear and direct with what it is that we need and want. And oftentimes people don't even know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I work with people, a lot of times I'm developing that with them for the very first time.
Yeah. You talk about true love and how it needs to be a complete package where we have to connect, you know, head, heart, body, and soul. Talk about that a little bit.
You want me to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Well, there are oftentimes with people, there is this disconnect between the head and the heart and the body and the soul, so that people become highly intellectualized or they become extremely highly emotional. And the idea is that if the head can be employed to determine what the heart is saying and then develop a vocabulary for what the heart is telling us or what the body is telling us that we need and want, then we can start to express that. And a lot of times what I find is that people don't have a vocabulary. They don't have a way of expressing what they need and want in a relationship. So they act out, and they will try to get what they need and want in a negative way. In other words, oftentimes conflict can be seen as a way to try to connect, that it's the only way people know how to connect, that if they start a big fight, there's an intensity about that. There's a sense of being riveted on one another. So if they don't feel that they are worth attention and worth being valued and cared about, then they're going to try to get it more in a negative way. So being connected up with what's going on internally and what we really need, and then being able to talk about that with someone and being able to support each one of our needs and wants in a relationship, you know, then becomes a process of developing this support for one another, and that we can give to one another back and forth.
Right.
And support our needs to be connected. And connection is a really important issue, as is a whole area of psychology that we call attachment. So how we're attached, whether that is in a secure way or an insecure way or an ambivalent way or in an avoidant way disorganized and confused, which is another form of attachment, which is developed by a man by the name of John Bowlby. And this is very, very big in our field now, the whole concept of how we're connected and how we're attached to one another and the methods that we use in order to develop that is very, very important. And it has a lot to do with how we originated our forms of attachment early on. And so learning how to develop not only a connection internally, but then being able to extend that outward is a very important and somewhat complex process. So it does take some reflection and some time to think about what is going on and what it is that's missing in our lives. And oftentimes it's the inability to understand what we need and the inability to express it because we don't have the words. And this is where sometimes we need help, and that's getting a helper, getting someone who can sit down with us and help us to define that for ourselves.
Yeah. It's becoming, I think, more and more important to you know, to, yes, be self-aware, but also that, you know, often we just need the support. We need, you know, somebody that is not involved that can assist us to understand it.
Yeah. It's a great revelation for people oftentimes just to understand that we need one another. Sometimes that's a huge revelation. We need one another? You mean we can need one another? That the concept isn't that we're supposed to be a rock on an island, that we're not supposed to be the Lone Ranger and ride into town and then ride out, that we can be someone that can depend or interdepend on one another? To quote Marian Solomon, who wrote a book called Lean on Me, which is a really interesting book, and if you're out there, Marian, thank you, where she talks about interdependency, where people can interdepend on one another and be able to talk about the things that they do together to help each other out. Mm-hmm. And that kind of support, not only in finding people that we can learn from and talk to, and mentors and or therapists, that can help us to understand ourselves well, which is very important as a process to get to know ourselves, which is probably the most important reason to go to therapy, is to get to know ourselves better.
Right.
And through self-knowledge comes the ability to connect.
Yeah. It's really, you've really written a lot of information that I really recommend people, you know, getting the book to understand everything that we're talking about. But, you know, one of the things I want to touch on, because I think it's a huge issue right now, and it was under the values, and it's, you know, the relationships comes before being right. And I think we, you know, we get so caught up, we're such a victim society that we always want to, you know, blame,
yeah,
you know, shame or blame somebody else for our problems, that we don't want to take responsibility. And we're all, and, you know, I've done it myself where I'm, you know, like, my goodness, like, it's, I know better. And, you know, I still, there's this drive, our ego, you know, wants and needs to be right. And it's part of maybe of being heard.
Well, being right is a product of not, of course, wanting to be wrong. Wanting to be wrong means that there's something wrong with you. And our body develops defenses before we're conscious of them. And that's why self-knowledge is so important, is because we have to be pre-consciously aware of something that's going on inside of us. And, you know, as astute as I am, I can find myself falling into being defensive with my wife. And I'm surprised. And so it's not that so much that we are defensive, it's that we recognize that we're being defensive when we can see it happening. And that's where self-knowledge comes in. So there isn't a perfect system. We're not going to be at a point where, well, sometimes I think we can get to a point, I'm working on it, where I never get defensive and I'm always able to do it. But I don't expect myself to be able to be perfect. I expect myself to be able to recognize when I'm off. And then being able to come back around. So I don't try to encourage people to say, well, you're not going to do this perfectly, and you don't expect yourself to, but you're going to want to be right because you don't want to be wrong, and you don't want to feel bad about yourself, that there's something wrong with you. And let's face it, we all, in many ways, most people have that sense, and that's where defenses come from, is that they're protecting the wound.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, why would a defense be there for? Why would we need to be right unless, you know, there's something going on with how we feel about being wrong? And one of the chapters, what's so wrong about being right? And what's really wrong with it is that we're not connected and we're defending and we're not listening.
Right.
And then that escalates whatever the problem is. So defenses are really the really difficult part of relationships, is to not fall into that process and being able to recognize when we do, and then make that shift to acknowledgement. Again, we come back to being able to acknowledge what's going on and recognize it and say, oh yes, I'm being defensive, and let me hear you out here. And that's where you can work together to alert one another. So one member of the relationship can say, well, you're being defensive right now. And then the person can come back and try to understand what that means. and then being able to reform the process, you know, reformulate the process with another person.
Right.
So sometimes we can't get it right away, but we can get it, you know, once we recognize we're doing it. We can't always recognize it immediately.
Right. One of the others...
No perfect system.
Yes, that's true. One of the others is, you know, not to take things personally. And again, you know, this maybe comes with your attachments, because we we tend to be attached to things, and maybe it's about the, you know, trying to be right versus wrong again. But, you know, when somebody does things, it's a bit of a challenge, but it's really a mind shift to say, hey, this isn't about me. This is about you. This is your stuff that you're getting triggered about. It just happens to also trigger my stuff, which is completely different.
Yeah. And this is where, if we accept our own wounds, then we can be imperfect, and we can be someone who's in the midst of a struggle to understand, and that's part of it. So when oftentimes... what I try to do with my own relationship is to start out by saying, you know, I don't want you to take this personally. This is not a personal attack on you. This is something that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I can even reframe, I can frame the way I'm saying something to work out the personalization of it if that's a continual problem. And I can say, don't take this personally. I'm trying to tell you something that's important to me, and that I want you really just to hear me out, and that's what's important to me. And then that frames the way the relationship, where the conversation is going to go. Taking things personally has something to do with these earlier shame issues that we were talking about, having to do with not being enough. So when we take something personally, it's because we feel that the person is telling us that we're not enough. And then we start defending what's going on, or we feel very attacked, even if we're not being attacked. So, as we, you know, as I've said, relationships are complex, and to understand the depth and the dimension of relationships is very important. We're not simple creatures, and a lot of times in pop psychology, we try to develop these tools and these kinds of processes that seem very simple, and they generally don't work because they are simple, and the solution oftentimes is a little more dimensional than oftentimes what we're led to believe that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to develop in this book a sense of dimension so people can actually get to resolve issues on a permanent basis so they don't come back again. That's
mm-hmm.
That's the point, is we want to help to make them really something that we can move on from, and develop processes where we can short-circuit our own personalization of things and defenses about things, and move towards a resolution, which is, you know, be able to name that tune in three notes, you know, be able to get a really slick process going where we can get right through something very quickly. So we have longer and longer periods of harmony and very short periods of disharmony. And from the disharmony, we use that as a method of getting even closer.
Nice. Yes.
Quite a challenge in its own way, but it's great to work on, and we can continually see progress and development in that. And if I couldn't work this process at home, I wouldn't be able to talk about it here.
Mm. Nice. Lead by example. That's always good.
Yeah. I have to make it work in my own home.
Yes. Talk about boundaries. I think, you know, we kind of struggle, and maybe that's just a woman's thing more than it is a man's thing, but we kind of have issues with creating healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where getting clear about what we need and want is, and
mm-hmm.
what we don't need and we don't want, you know, so that we're able to have discussions about that. Like, I don't like it when you do this, or I don't want you to do that, or I want this in the relationship and I don't want that. Boundaries are really based on feelings, which is an odd way to think about it. But if we can contact ourselves and understand what feels right and what doesn't feel right, then we know a lot about our boundaries. So to understand what we're feeling and understand that same kind of vocabulary that tells us that something doesn't feel right to us. That's where boundaries come from, not from an intellectual concept, but really much more of an emotional one, where we're checking into our own feelings and what's going on so that we can express it. And I think that's a healthy way to establish boundaries. And I think that works pretty well with most people. And we can respect if someone tells us, you know, gee, that, this is not something I really want to do. And I don't particularly want you to do that. And I'd appreciate it if you, you know, would respect that. And most people will. And I think they can get sometimes maybe, you know, people can get a little carried away with boundaries sometimes. But I think even if they're getting carried away, it's for a good reason. Is there's something going on that they need to look at and need to understand within themselves. If there are a lot of boundaries, what's the sensitivity about? Why is it there? What's it doing for the person? What value does it really have? And in that sense, all processes have meaning. And so it's the important thing is to find out what things mean and understand the logic to our own behavior. And it all has a logical basis. It's all understandable. And if we understand that, then we're really in the process of working things through in a good way.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of times people don't feel they have a right to their own feelings, and they don't have a right to their own boundaries because they're supposed to be a certain way, as opposed to understanding why they're feeling the way they are. Why is it working this way? What's it doing for us? What are we trying to achieve? What are we trying to work out? Just like, you know, when I was working with children years ago, and when I was a teacher in my former life, you know, all behavior from children had meaning. That was the way they expressed themselves, was through acting out with behavior. And if you understood the behavior, you really understood what was going on and what they were trying to say. It's not that much different with adults.
So you talk about the ultimate power tool is control and perfectionism. And I think, you know, I try to say to people, you know, we have control over absolutely nothing. We can take charge in our lives and, look at our reactions and, you know, but we don't have any control. But I think we really, it's a tough one to let go of.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was making the point in the book is that trying to control things externally is really trying to control things internally.
Yes.
And that's why people do try to control, is that they feel that they're going to go out of control. And when people feel that inside of them, they feel fragile, and inside of them, they feel like they're just going to fall apart, and maybe they're not even aware of that, then they're going to try to control everything on an external level so that, you know, they don't feel enormous amounts of anxiety or pain or difficulty or that they're going to fall apart. So control is an effort to try to control an internal process. Because if we don't need to do that, then we don't need to be in control. So it has, it has a logic to it, it has a purpose, but it makes it very difficult on everyone else. So people need to understand what's going on internally that they're trying to resolve by controlling everything around them. And perfection itself and trying to be perfect is a way of trying to control something internally and even externally. So it's that process that we have to get to know and understand why it's there, what the purpose is.
Right. Now, you say that myth and fantasy play kind of a big role in how we sort of form our relationships. And the media has done a great job at that, but not just the media.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, you watch the commercial and, you know, it's always this, there they are in, you know, that one that where they're in Italy and, you know, I love this man and he's giving her a big ring and, you know, there's all this kind of very intense romantic fantasy that goes on. And you know, relationships don't always work that way. They don't always, you know, there isn't always this, fantasy love and romance that's going on a daily basis. I mean, people, you know, are trying to get up in the morning, go to work and trying to deal with the problems that they have, trying to get through their lives. And oftentimes, you know, the higher the romantic ideal, the more difficult the relationship. So people with unrealistic expectations, or that they have myths about themselves or others, you know, it can create a lot of dissension and difficulty in relationships. Whether relationships are successful or not has a lot to do with the intensity of what the mythology is. So people who are realistic have a better time in relationships than people who are highly romantic, you know, have a high romantic fantasy process. There's also the concept of personal myths, where we have these personal myths about ourselves as, you know, unworthy and not good enough, and that this is a mythology. This is an internal mythology where we actually believe something about ourselves that is not true. Mm-hmm. And people exist in this level of untruth and don't really know that they are and go through their lives with this mythology. The same way fantasy can work in a myriad of different ways, either negatively or positively. You know, oftentimes fantasies have something to do with what's going on a deeper level and can work in a good way to help us to understand what it is we want.
Right. And then that sort of brings us, you know, the fantasy part to sex. And that's a huge part in relationships. And obviously when it's breaking down, it shows, you know, the dynamics that are breaking down in a relationship. But, I mean, we'll talk about that. Talk about how it's a snapshot of the relationship. Sex.
Oh, sex is a snapshot. Well, sex is considered to be somewhat emblematic, what we call an emblem of how the relationship is doing. It's a good barometer of where things are. It's difficult. Sex is a difficult issue in many ways because we don't need sex to survive. But in terms of a deeper sense of caring and bonding and what makes a relationship into a relationship is that it's sexual and not just roommates. But to keep a sex life going, there's a lot of things that have to be happening that are important, which is, you know, a feeling of safety, a sense of respect and care, and that we feel good about that person, and that we are making time for that process to go on. And oftentimes couples just never make time for it, and then they lose the connection. And it does tell us about the level of how we're feeling and the way we're connected with each other, and the quality of it will determine, kind of says a lot about where we are in our relationship with one another. So there's a great deal of difficulty with long-term relationships and sexuality for a lot of people. And it's just the statistics are somewhat alarming in the sense of how many couples are not very active.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know more, I can speak more. Maybe you can ask me some more questions about it. But it's a very difficult subject.
Yeah.
And one I try to handle as well as possible. And because there's no... Sex is one of those things we have to develop for ourselves because there are no rules. It's not like a right sex life to have. You know, we can develop whatever it is that we want to develop with one another, but you have to be able to talk about it, and you have to be able to put it on the table and make time for it and make a space for it and look forward to it. And like Esther Perel wrote this book called Mating in Captivity.
Okay.
It's a very interesting and fun book. And she talks about, you know, thinking about sex like, you know, having people over for dinner. You know, that you're planning it. You're actually going out and you're buying the food and you're planning the meal and you're making it something that you go through a whole process in. And she says sex is very much the same way, that we have to plan for it. We have to, and people say, well, how can we be spontaneous? And I say, well, plan to be spontaneous, because if you don't make time for it, it's probably not going to happen. And so if people can look forward to it and make a plan to be together and then talk about what it is that they both want and like and what kind of a sex life, you know, feels good to them and the way they would like to have that work for themselves, and, you know, they can develop something that can be continually satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sex, you know, in many ways is originally developed around a sense of danger, I think. Interestingly enough, that's one of the things that people brought up in describing sex. And relationships aren't dangerous. particularly after a while. You know, it's just, you know the person really well, you've been with them a lot, and, you know, it's not necessarily as exciting as it once was, but the idea is to create a little bit of a excitement by doing some things that you both enjoy, and or, you know, developing a much more of a spiritual process where it becomes something where you're really connecting and connecting in a good way, whether it's very, you know, affectionate and caring and supporting, and, you know, it can be lots of different ways of approaching it as opposed to more of the Hollywood version. You know, there's a whole spiritual way to look at sexuality and kundalini sex and lots of ways of doing things in terms of massaging one another or being very close and being able to talk and not feeling pressure and things that are going on there that are very important.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Compromise. Can you really compromise without both of you being unhappy?
Hopefully not. I think there's, I always say there's got to be some point where both people feel comfortable. There has to be some place that both people feel all right. So the idea is that it's finding a place where both people can feel pretty good. It's like we just got through, you know, in very simple kind of concept is we just got through putting some tile down in our home, and our rule is that we both have to like it. My wife comes in with some tile that's, you know, has, it's very, you know, shiny and slick, and I kind of like more earth tones, and so we settled on something that was really basically kind of something in the middle that we both liked, and we found it, and that took a little bit of time and it took a little bit of work, but we found a nice spot for it. And I think everything is kind of like that. It's like when you're watching television, find a show you both like to watch. There's got to be one show that you can both endure and like, or a movie that you can both enjoy. And sometimes not, but if you work at it, sometimes you can, most of the time you can find something that works for both of you. And I think that's the kind of cornerstone of relationships, is the sense of caring about how each one of you feels and then being able to do something to accommodate that.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, let's end this with, you know, what are some tips and techniques for the holidays? What is, I guess, you know, it's really looking at your problem solving ideas, but, you know, what can people do to, you know, make this a better year, make this, you know, an easier time, less stress? Talk about some of the things that they can do in their relationship to assist them.
Well, interestingly enough, I just, on my website, BillCloak.com, if anybody wants to tune into that, I just wrote a blog on holiday stuff.
Nice.
And one of the things I wrote on was this, trying to keep our expectations reasonable and trying to not necessarily pressure ourselves too much to try to do everything perfectly for every aspect of the holiday season, but to be able to just enjoy the time that we spend together and to try to put it in a context that involves things like being together as the most important function of holiday and not gift-giving, and feel that we have to give everybody the perfect gift and do everything just right, but really trying to do things that are expressing of our concern and our care for others. It's a good time of the year to express love and express concern, but we can do that in some very simple and good ways, and we don't have to knock ourselves out to do everything for everyone all the time or to expect everyone to do all kinds of things for us. We have to leave our expectations at the door and try to just think about more than ever how important the people are that we care about to us, and that we can do that in a lot of ways. You know, you can do things that are very inexpensive that still mean a lot. And I think keeping that in mind is really important during the holidays, because most people drive themselves crazy trying to do everything for everybody. And it's that's not the goal of this time of year. I think the goal of this time of year is to express love and to enjoy being together.
Mm-hmm. It's challenging, though, because we do have these expectations. And I mean, that's where we, I think, receive so much of our disappointment, because we've always had these expectations. It's difficult to, you know, let go of that
Yeah. Yeah, one of the chapters, or one of the chapter headings is Big Expectations, Big Disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we expect, the probably the more often we're going to be disappointed. And so when we can make our expectations either non-existent or realistic, you know, to try to work at developing a realistic set of expectations, which is what we can actually, you know, what we receive can be an expectation. In other words, what people do for our time at this time is more, you know, to accept what people give with an open hand, in other words, and to not expect things from people that when we don't get them, we then become angry and upset and disappointed, but accept what people are able to give and understand when they can't. And then, you know, try to help ourselves to not have them. So the less we deal in expectation, the better probably we're going to be, because then we're never going to be disappointed by what we don't get.
And I think there's, I'm assuming, and I'm pretty sure I read it in your book about, you know, it's really, you know, connecting in with yourself too, and, you know, taking that silent time to, you know, understand what it is that you want or need. It's probably more need that we look at. The wants are nice, but, you know, if you, you know, can connect in with what you need, and most people will at all times, not just the holiday, but most people, what they need is to feel love.
That's right.
To be loved and accepted for who they are.
That's right. Fundamentally, that's what we all want.
Yeah. And so take that time instead of getting, or as soon as you feel that disappointment, you know, just sort of take that time and connect in. Like, what is it? Why are you feeling disappointed? What is it about this that makes you feel disappointed? Well, because you had different expectations, or you had, you know, it's not showing you something that you have perceived as, you know, you not being lovable or acceptable for who you are.
Am I trying to work out my own sense of self-acceptance by getting other people to do things for me so that I can feel okay about myself, or what? You know, what's the logic to what's going on? What am I trying to achieve here? Am I trying to work something out for myself, or am I really trying to develop something that's a strong connection with someone else?
Right.
So again, looking at the logic, the what we're really trying to achieve is important.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there we are.
There we are. We could end it with one last, the acronym that you had at the end, which is CURE.
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 Compassion, understanding, respect, and empathy. If you're not using one of those, either with yourself or others, you're off track.
Right. One of them or all of them. Well, you have been a delight. This has been a very informative interview. I think, you know, people that are wanting to understand themselves, wanting to understand their relationship, or wanting to understand how to create a better relationship or more harmonious relationship, I think this is the book to get to understand, you know, a little bit about your own dynamics and the dynamics that happen while you're in a relationship. So I think, you know, this is something that a lot of people need.
Well, thank you very much.
It's been
a great pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, do you want to tell people again how to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is through my website, Bill Cloak, C-L-O-K-E, BillCloak.com.
Awesome.
And all my information is there.
Perfect.
And the book, too.
And there you go.
All right,
then. Very enjoyable. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.